Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 5th, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with our editor, Nancy Goff, and our chief scientific editor, Michael Yaffe. We thought that the first podcast of the new year would be a good time to talk about the current state of research in cellular signaling and how science signaling can serve that community. Hi, Nancy. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, Annalisa.
So the first major issue that I'd like to bring up is how much we actually know about signaling pathways and the crosstalk that occurs between them. The scientific community has identified many of the major players in canonical signaling pathways. So how much more is there left to learn?
I think that we have a pretty good understanding of most of the basic players in many of the canonical signaling pathways. Where I think we're deficient is in our understanding of how one pathway communicates with another pathway and how those pathways change over time as a function of environment and environmental stresses.
And I would argue that while we may have a really good handle on the major protein players in canonical signaling pathways, we don't have a very good handle on the lipid players or some of the RNA players or many of the metabolic intermediates that we're beginning to realize are not just metabolic intermediates but are true regulatory molecules in and of themselves, and that their abundance also changes how cells behave and respond to their environment.
How about post-translational modifications?
I think that historically our field has been dominated by an understanding of post-translational modifications relatively limited to phosphorylation on tyrosine or serine or threonine or protein ubiquitination or sumoylation. And I think we're now beginning to recognize that there are a wide variety of other post-translational modifications, things like modifications by metabolic intermediates or by citrullination or by other post-translational modifications, the study of which is still in its infancy. One of the things that makes this difficult is we have great tools for studying phosphorylation and reasonable tools for ubiquitination, but the tools to study various oxidation states of thiols, for example, or nitroso modifications really lag behind those in these other more canonical post-translational modifications, and that has been a rate-limiting step in our ability to understand how these other post-translational modifications are regulated, the proteins on which they occur, and the manner in which those modifications are integrated with the modifications that we understand a bit better.
Yes, I agree. I think there's going to be a much more complex post-translational modification code than the one that we have discovered thus far. And in addition to post-translational modifications adding complexity to the system, one of the underappreciated aspects of signaling, I think, for many people who aren't in the trenches studying signaling is we also have a lot of alternative splice variants, for example. We have a lot of alternative start points in transcripts, so you may get a different beginning to a protein. We have cleavage-based changes where we think about a precursor form of a protein, and then we have the view that it gets cleaved, and then that shorter piece is the active form. Well, we're discovering that sometimes those full-length forms have functions, and we just hadn't been looking and doing the right assays to measure them. So the complexity in the system is still very much in its infancy and being discovered, I think.
What do you think are some of the other major challenges remaining in the field of cell signaling?
I would say a much better understanding of pathway crosstalk, the roles of moonlighting proteins, that is proteins whose function we think we have a detailed understanding of, but only go on later to discover that the protein has one or more other moonlighting tasks that are likely to be equally important to the function that was originally attributed to it from classical biochemical studies. I think we're beginning to recognize and appreciate the tremendous extent to which pathways get rewired in response to human adaptation, in response to stressful conditions or novel environmental issues, novel environmental stresses.
Or even drug therapy, where mm-hmm. we're intending to change the behavior of the organism, the cell, the person, but maybe in ways that we hadn't anticipated at the molecular level.
I think trying to take signaling back from the level of in vitro experiments or single cells back into the whole organism, trying to understand how does signaling occur in a complex tissue? How does it occur in an organ? What is the interface between the commensal microbial organisms that colonize all of us and the signaling pathways in our tissues that have to adapt and are used to functioning in that complex meta-organismal environment? How do we apply signaling translationally? How do we look at the interface between classical cell biology and signaling and between immunology and signaling and development and signaling? How do we take our basic understanding of signaling pathways and apply this therapeutically to control human health and disease, to impact on agriculture, to impact on therapeutics for animal diseases?
I think those are all really important points. The signaling field is incredibly broadly applicable, and we tend to think very much in terms of biomedicine, but there's a huge amount of understanding how microbes signal, hosts and their pathogens, how pathogens find their hosts. And this occurs both in plants and in agriculture and in human beings. And if you choose to read Breakthrough, that's also in this issue, malaria wound up being one of the breakthrough diseases in terms of treatment strategies and understanding at a molecular level how that can be targeted. So I think there's a lot to learn about interspecies communication and how the hosts respond to their pathogens or to their symbionts. Lots of plants require a symbiotic fungi in order to take up nitrates, and we need to be able to understand these processes if we're going to be able to feed the world.
How do you see science signaling's role in the signaling community?
I think our role is to continue the tradition of understanding signaling pathways and networks from the level of pure dissection, but we continue to be particularly interested now in translational applications of signaling to other biological disciplines, cell biology, stem cells, tissue regeneration, medicine, agriculture, aging, immunology, neurobiology, trying to understand signaling not just in the context of a single pathway, although that's certainly very important, and we continue to be interested in dissecting things down at the molecular and atomic level, but also looking at how these fit into the bigger picture of biological processes.
What science signaling needs to be able to do is help the community appreciate the complexity that exists in regulatory biology, but also help the community see how we leverage the information we're learning to advance society and to benefit humanity and to generate new approaches to tackle some of the issues that come with having billions of people on a finite-sized planet.
And so now I want to focus in on a couple of specific areas of signaling research. First, systems biology. There are a lot of researchers studying signaling at the network level, beyond the level of biochemistry or single molecules. How does systems biology fit into the scope of science signaling?
So science signaling has been a true pioneer in the area of systems biology. I think we were the first journal to truly embrace it as a discipline, and probably the first journal to really encourage submissions of papers that combined large-scale data collection with computational analysis. And this emerged as a consequence of our ability to capture large data sets when you needed a computational analysis in order to interpret it. And the approaches now have evolved so that just being able to capture a lot of data and capturing trends computationally is no longer enough. Now, one way that science signaling is particularly interested in moving forward with systems biology is to use systems approaches in physiologically relevant cell types and to try to make predictions that are physiologically meaningful and address biologically relevant questions. And so when we look at papers in the areas of systems biology, we're interested in things in which either the data set itself has so much intrinsic value to the scientific community that it merits publication in our journal, or the data set that was collected and analyzed reveals some fundamental new biology in a physiologically meaningful way.
We have two types of places in the journal where we can publish this kind of work, And when data sets are of so much intrinsic value, those papers frequently would fit in the research resources section. And by that kind of a data set, it's a relevant data set, relevant for asking later questions, and it's a data set that is going to be used by large communities to ask questions and to advance signaling research. So those kinds of papers we're definitely still quite interested in, and we also are quite interested in looking at the integration of different types of data sets, because not only are we able to capture large-scale proteomic studies or RNA-seq studies that look at different transcripts or expression analysis, but we're starting to be able to put these together to look for new patterns that we couldn't see in just one data set or the other. So the research resources certainly is the place where that kind of a study would go. When the data set leads to the discovery or a prediction that then is tested and used to make a discovery, those papers would then be research articles and would be handled in that part of the journal. They both have the same format. They are both considered research, but we do have two different ways that they can be assessed, because they really are very different types of papers, very different types of research.
And how about synthetic biology? Researchers are getting better and better at designing proteins to perform very specific tasks, and even in engineering multi-component systems to control cell processes. How does synthetic biology fit into the field of cellular signaling and the interests of the journal?
So I think there are a variety of ways that synthetic biology can be helpful and very insightful for understanding signaling and biological processes in general. We've had a number of papers in Science Signaling that I think are good examples of this. On one hand, you can use synthetic biology to try to understand a pre-existing biological system, and this can reveal new methods of regulation, new types of allosteric communication within proteins or between proteins within networks. Or alternatively, one can use synthetic biology to control a signaling system and make it behave in a particular way that we want it to. And this is likely to have tremendous potential for translational applications in things like human health and disease, the design of new therapies, or the creation of new tissues by synthetically altering the intrinsic properties of stem cells or stem cell compartments.
Where would you like to see Science Signaling go in the next few years? Are there particular areas of research that you anticipate becoming more prominent in the journal?
I would hope that we would move in the direction of organismal signaling, that is, understanding signaling at the level of tissues and organs, taking the information that we know in vitro and putting it back in vivo, looking at translational aspects of signaling. I think that we're well positioned for mechanistic studies of the megaorganism, the human plus commensal microorganisms, for example. I think it would be particularly fascinating to look at the molecular basis for interaction between the innate and adaptive immune systems, understanding signaling that's involved in stem cell and tissue regeneration, fibrosis, and disease, understanding stress tolerance in plants and animals. We have a long-standing interest in understanding the role of signaling in development in neurobiology, and particularly in understanding the role of new regulators, proteins, RNA, metabolites, and unanticipated regulatory roles for previously well-characterized molecules. I think it's particularly important that we work now at the interface between signaling and cell biology. I think there are a variety of evolutionarily ancient systems, the blood clotting system, for example, or the complement system, or a variety of lipids that seem to be involved in resolving inflammation, and understanding how these ancient systems interact with the rest of the immune system, for example, or the rest of tissue regeneration and stem cell biology to control outcomes. Those would be areas that I would find particularly interesting. I'd be very curious what Nancy finds as growth areas for our journal.
So I would say that we want to see more papers that take signaling at a systems level. And when I say systems level in this context, I don't necessarily just mean capturing a lot of data from one cell or a cell in culture, but maybe looking at multi-parameter measurements across a set of cells in an organism, looking at how the different cells in the intestine are interacting with the cells of the immune system, and they are also interacting with the microbes that inhabit that space, and trying to put these back together and understand the regulatory interactions that are occurring there. So I would say that another area for us is the systems biology of interacting systems within an organism. I would also say that we aren't only interested in human biology or mammalian biology. There's a lot of microbial biology. There's a lot that can be learned from genetically tractable organisms, for example, yeast. We're able to do a lot of very detailed analysis using organisms that can be engineered or specific knockouts can be done. I think some of the new technologies where we're beginning to use the targeted DNA editing, the CRISPR-Cas methodology, for example, and some of the new microscopy methods, these are really going to revolutionize how we can look at molecular machines, the regulatory complexes that are quite dynamic. And I think signaling should be poised to look for those papers, and we're very interested in seeing the results of those studies and where that's going to take us in the future.
Michael and Nancy, thanks for talking to us about how you see science signaling in the community.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Nancy Goff is the editor of Science Signaling, and Michael Yaffe is our chief scientific editor. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.